Welcome back to the AgTech So What podcast, brought to you by Agventic. I'm your host, Sarah Nollet. Today's guest joins us from Iowa, where Carmen Maimon and her husband have been farming since 1976. Their farm, MBS Family Farms, has grown over that time from 160 acres and 40 cows to an operation that now supports 20 families. And Carmen has played a key role in that growth. She's an operator, the head of finance, a grain marketer, and so, so much more, as you'll hear. We talk about her journey in farming over the last nearly 45 years, including what she's learned about technology, business, and people. But Carmen didn't originally want to be a farmer. We jump in with how she found herself on a farm in a world that in some ways is quite a bit different, and yet in some ways is the same as things are today.
Well, I graduated from the high school just about 3 or 4 miles from here and married my high school sweetheart. Graduated in May of 1976 and got married in August. So I always thought that I would go to college, wanted to go to Iowa State, be a home ec teacher. And Stan was out a year ahead of me, and he wanted me to be home with him. He wanted me to farm with him. He didn't want me to go to college. And so he bought me my first pair of jeans, Penny's Plain Pockets, and there we go. That was in 1976.
At first, Carmen didn't get all that involved with the farm.
Yeah, so, you know, my dad farmed with his uncles, and so I only had to feed the dog. You know, there's always plenty of help around. My mom worked in town, so I didn't have much experience, and I was married into a dairy farmer, and so we milked cows. And like when we were going together, I never even went in the barn because I didn't want my hair to smell bad. So I would stand in the pickup bed outside the barn and wait for him to get done with chores. So it was a big learning curve. I never learned to milk. My mother-in-law told me never learn to milk or you'll be stuck with it. So I fed the calves and did chores, you know, finish running the rake or the baler or the field cultivator so he can come home, or help him out in the shop, fix stuff. I can remember one time he was putting on an old two-row mounted picker. He was putting it on the tractor, the M tractor, and he drove the tractor underneath there. And he just needed me to put my hand underneath there and screw in a bolt. I was not going to put my hand under there, you know. I mean, yeah, that was back in the day.
Carmen's initial motivations to help out were more about off-farm priorities.
My role in farming just started to go fast because I wanted him to get done with his work so that we could go somewhere. So he needed my help if we were going to be on time at any point.
But Carmen didn't stay on the sidelines for long.
It was just Stan and I. And so I basically grew up in a man's world. You know, I went to the dairy barn meetings with Stan. I went to the sale barn with him. I went and got parts for him. So I knew all the guys at the equipment places, the repair shops, the veterinarian. And I went to some marketing classes. Stan was very receptive to giving up responsibility because he always had more to do than he could get done. And so, you know, right away, he sent me to some marketing classes and I started marketing the grain, which was very unusual for men to do.
What did that feel like to show up to one of these classes? I'm sure you were one, if not the only woman in the room.
I was the only woman in the room and I went with the neighbor man. Stan didn't go to the classes with me, went with the neighbor man. Yeah. You know, I have those are friends I still have. I guess I always grew up in my home with my mom and dad, thinking that my parents thought whatever I had to say was, you know, they wanted to listen to it. So I didn't have any worries about not being heard because I'd always been heard.
Over time, Carmen continued to be much more than just heard. As the farm grew, so too did her role.
So Stan and I started farming with 160 acres, that M farm hall, a two-row mounted picker, and we milked 40 cows. So over the years, we were always in a growth mode. We were up to going to freshen 100 heifers in 1986. We were going to go big or go home. And the dairy whole herd buyout came along, which was a government program that paid us to quit milking. And then that kind of catapulted us ahead in the 80s, because for one day and one day only, we were without debt. We were debt free. We got all that money, paid off everything. And so when these farm sales, these depressed farm sales were going on, we didn't have debt. We could buy stuff cheaper. People weren't interested in renting land, so we rented land.
Carmen and Stan continued to expand. And then, in the early 2000s, their son Kyle and his wife came home to the farm.
2006 was our first year together. And we continued to grow because then we had to, you know, raise more income for the other, for the family, you know. And I think we farm. Am I supposed to tell you how much we farm?
If you want to, you don't have to.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm going to say, is that our operation supports 20 families.
Talk about being in growth mode. Over those years, Carmen's role continued to expand rapidly, including looking into how technology could help the business.
I always did the books. Stanley was always the big thinker, and I was the implementer. And that was just, that was our roles. And so I got very interested in computerized record keeping from the get-go. And we bought a used computer. I don't even remember what it was, but you had to have the floppies. I know that. And I learned how to do computerized record keeping. And then in 2000, I was asked to be a part of a program that was the Farm Financial Standards. And basically what we were doing is we were testing the Farm Financial Standards that group was suggesting. And that was really exciting. And it made a big difference in how our bookkeeping looked, and we could actually start using it to make decisions. It was in a workable form. And so that was a big deal for me.
It was through this work that Carmen met Alan Lash, the founder of Family Farms Group, an organization that would prove to be transformational for Carmen and Stan. So much so that in looking back, it's one of three pivotal moments in their farming history.
So there's basically three things, you know, dairy whole herd buyout was before that and after that. And then it was Farm Financial Standards before that and after that. And now it's Family Farms before that and after that. And so Family Farms, the concept is farms are going to get bigger. You're going to have to know how to manage things that you haven't had to manage before, HR, PR, crisis management, all those kinds of things. And Family Farms together, if you can find farmers that are like-minded, you'll be able to survive the consolidation that we believed is coming. Their focus was to be exterior and our focus was to be interior. So we could run our businesses, but they would put a lot of new stuff in front of us. And that's what they did. And they helped us to grow our business. I would say that our business has grown by 5 times since 2006.
You mentioned internal and external. Tell me more about that.
The way it works is that MBS Family Farms is one of the many farming teams in the group that come together to share resources and best practices.
They provide resources, HR, landowner relations, all those kinds of things. And they also put speakers in front of us. They I don't want to use the word push, but encouraged us, you know, to look at succession planning and landowner management. We have a crisis management plan. Would we have had that in place? Because we have coaches. That's why it's different than just going to a conference. We have coaches, and those coaches, we meet with them once a month, and it's usually over the phone, but we do have one-on-one meetings. But they look at our initiatives, help us build our initiatives, because you can't do everything in 1 year. And then, okay, how are you coming on this? Who do you need? What kind of help do you need? So that's what I mean about external. And there is some buying together and there is some ideas that we do together.
An example of this was a certification program.
They pushed us encouraged us to be part of a certification program. So our farm has been certified in environmental practices and farm security since 2009. And it's like, when do you need to be certified? Not yesterday. You needed to be 10 years ago.
And when they encourage or not push some of these ideas, do you often find that you're like, what are these guys talking about? But you've built up enough trust and now you give it a serious look?
Yes. And I would tell you the thing that we probably didn't take on right away was when they said, you know, how we were going to be bigger, because we couldn't get past that we were doing as much as we physically could. So we had reached our glass ceiling. Like, there was a whole session on the glass ceiling and then how to break through that. And then that, what would that require? And then there was a structure that they helped us build, a structure that took our operations away from our capital. And so we could, you know, see where we were making our money and, you know, if we were having a return to our assets, much, much better than just one checkbook full of how, you know, whose money is it? Whose dollar is this?
I've had a few conversations with farmers about getting coaching or getting help like this. And I think it can be, for any business owner, a tough thing because it feels like asking for help and you want to say you don't need that help. What was it like to maybe not ask for help, but in always receive help that's been valuable?
It was the timing. It was the timing. Okay, Stan and I, his father was killed when he was a young man, and his mom remarried, and we didn't have to answer to anybody. It was just Stan and I. Kyle's coming home. Kyle and Carrie are coming home. They're getting married. We have no idea how to do this. And so that was the exact time that we were joining family farms. And so I can remember one of the first exercises is we had to fill in an org chart. Well, there was only four of us and there's like 25 boxes. And so we're, you know, like, blah, 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 blah. But what it did is show us that we can't all be worrying about what seed variety we're going to buy. You know, we had to spread out the work. We had to spread out the talents. And that also gave Kyle and Stan and Carrie and I a way to say, don't need to worry. That's my box. You know, it gave us some language.
Being part of this support network helped Carmen and Stan with the transition as their son Kyle and his wife Carrie came back to the farm.
We were at a family farms conference and there was a speaker in front of us whose father had turned over his operation to his son at what we would consider a fairly early age. I mean, I think the dad was in his 50s, but the point was a farmer probably has 40 crops in his career. And I mean, Kyle needed to have those 40 crops on his own. And so that was very impactful for us. So one January, the four of us met for an owner's meeting, and Stan said to Kyle and Carrie that, you know, I'm still going to be here, but you need to step forward and I need to step back. And Kyle wisely said, there's three ways you get that job. It's if the father dies and it's dumped on you, or there's been trouble in paradise and you're leaving each other, or you're still here and I can still ask you. And so that was pretty impactful too. And no, it isn't always smooth. I mean, Carrie Ann and Kelsey have their own lives and their own careers, and they do things, you know, very well, and they do their way, and they don't have to put up with us. You know, Kyle's here every day. And what I'm telling you, the good stuff, you know, I'm telling you, you know, what worked, but I mean, they have to put up with our quirks and our, you know, whatever. We try not to have that much whatever, but there's some whatever in there.
There's always some whatever. Yeah. I always say that I love my dad. We're very close, but I don't know if I could work with him, at least not day in, day out. And so I'm so impressed by the people that do, because I think it's hard to work with the people you're closest to.
I think that's very true. And I also think our girls know that. In a perfect world, my family has so many talents that, you know, in a whole, I mean, could just propel the whole, but you've got to be a family first.
Over the years, Carmen has had some ups and of course some downs. I asked her about her worst and her best years.
One of the worst years was when we were farming by ourselves and we had a hail storm that came through and there were 900 acres probably at the time out of our 2,500 acres that we never combined. And it was before crop insurance was a very good product and we didn't have crop insurance. And our bank made the statement that they didn't think that they could go with us for the next year without ever asking for one number. They didn't ask me for any financials. They made that decision just because they knew we had hail. We had had a relationship because my father had always suggested you have more than one banker. and we had a relationship with another banker, and it was on a Saturday. That happened on a Friday, and it was on a Saturday, and I called him up, and I said, I need to talk to you, Fred. I need to talk to you. And I told him what was going on. And I said to Stan that night, I've got to get my paperwork. I got to get my finances in, or I got, you know, we're going to have to work all night. And he said, no, let's just see what he says. And I wish I knew what he asked me before, but he asked me for two numbers. I don't know what they are. And he said, you know, you're going to be okay. And, but that's a lot of income. That's a third of your income. And then have a banker that we had been with for 22 years, you know, kind of turn their back. So that was a bad year.
It's such an interesting one in agriculture. Like, we talk about how it's so relationship based, but those relationships can come under pressure, and, you know, there needs to be the, I don't know about the data, but yeah, the kind of backing to that and the risk management plan that sounds like you had in place as well.
Right, right. And so probably the best year, what I'm going to say is our best year is we had a goal one year. I think it was 2000. I don't know what year it was. I should know. Nobody was pregnant. I don't know. Anyway, we had a goal for the farm. If we got 200 bushel yield as an average, we would go to Hawaii. Everybody, our whole team would go to Hawaii. So anyway, to make the story shorter, we made it, and we didn't go to Hawaii. We went to Jamaica. So I think there was 35 of us. We took our team. We took my parents. We took Carrie, Ann, and Matt, and Kelsey and Greg. And now our goal is 210. And what I was just so happy because we could share and invest in our employees and show them the benefits of being part of MBS and all of that.
The team now has the goal set at 210 bushels on average. And this, a shared goal and rewards, is just one of the ways that MBS Family Farms continues to invest in their people and to grow. Another area they've invested in more recently is an ag tech solution.
Well, you know, when you're a sole proprietor, you're doing everything. You're buying, you're planting, you're recording. You know where every single piece of the whole process is and you know who did it because it was you. But when you grow your business and now you have other people, now you have to rely on somebody else. And so what was happening is we put together a plan, but the actuals compared to the plan were all kind of dumped into the winter months, and we had to, you know, try to remember and sort it out and get it recorded. We would always record them in Bible books longhand. I have all kinds of binders of Bible books, and you know, the yield and what actually happened. And we used to do the yield by counting the truckloads, you know, or the wagon loads, you know. But whatever. Well, that's tedious and it's not very accurate, and it was just a horrible job. And so Conservis was a company that Family Farms brought in front of us. Mm-hmm. And we were not an early adapter. We weren't one of the ones who tried it out. It was expensive, you know, and how could we afford it? Those kinds of things. But we kind of let a couple years go by, and there were other people that got some of the bugs out. So about the third year in, we decided to do it. And right from the get-go, you know, we were finding things. One time we were charged for the same load of fertilizer twice, and Conservis was able to tell us that. And, you know, one time we weren't paid for a load of beans. Well, we had the documentation, and I'm going to back up. The very first year, nobody owned the data. So I was putting a little in, Carrie was putting a little in, Kai was putting it in, and Kai would say, you know, well, run me a report. Well, it made no sense to anybody because nobody had followed through or whatever. And so one of the Family Farms resources said, you need to have a dedicated resource. You need to hire a dedicated resource. And as soon as we hired a dedicated resource, it became her job. And she was not an ag girl, right. But she pretended like she was an investigator, private investigator. And she would get to the bottom of this. And, you know, Conservis, they have really super support. And so if they saw some of our data coming in live, and it was ugly, they would bring it to, they would call up Laura, and they would say, this doesn't match up, and the timing's off on this. What can you tell me? And so, you know, in the beginning, it was not as good as it is now. But as we say here, did you conservice that? You better have conservice that.
You, I mean, made it a verb.
It's a verb. For sure.
I love it. I love it. A lot of really good kind of things we talk about there often, Carmen. So one is like the trusted intermediary introduced you to the technology. It wasn't something that, you know, the tech itself came knocking on your door trying to sell it. You kind of had that trusted party, the ownership to kind of have buy-in and implement it, but also the whole team getting on board and, you know, taking it slowly and kind of building up those benefits over time. Those are all things that I would say are best practices in terms of technology adoption. And yeah, sounds like you guys did a really good job with all of it, and it's worked out, which is great to
hear.
Well,
and I mean, I can't even say that we knew what we were doing. That's just kind of what happened. And then we, because there was such good support, and we would say, well, if it could do this, it would make sorting so much easier. And so then they started relying on us to change the software or make it more user-friendly. So then we piloted another portion of it, another module. And I mean, our footprint is all over that. So, you know, like, we love it because it's just what we wanted.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's such an underrated benefit of working with some of these technology companies. You know, you can have that input and you can influence the features, whereas with a giant big company, they're just not going to listen to you in the same way.
That is so true. And that is so true. And I'm a big believer and proponent, and I don't even use it. Yeah. I don't use it at all. I just remember what it was like without it.
I asked Carmen about a few other hot areas in ag and ag tech right now, like automation and carbon farming, both of which she's looked into. For example, they've recently looked at Smart Ag, a retrofit solution to automate grain carts that was acquired late last year by Raven Industries. The founder of Smart Ag, Colin, approached MBS Family Farms to trial the product.
So Colin came here from the get-go, and we were one of the farms that tested the auto cart, and we're gonna do that. I mean, if when agriculture turns around here, I mean, that's something that Kyle's very, very interested in. Mm. And the carbon credits, what is exciting for us is that he has been working with our certification records, with our conservice records. We're third party certified, and they can use all of our data from our back data from certification, our back data from conservice. And some of these companies are very, very interested for the carbon footprint that we have had in the past and our carbon footprint moving forward. And that's really exciting. And Kyle thinks that our data has value, and we work with another company that has used our data back 30 years and put it into some modeling with mm-hmm. weather and those kinds of things. So yeah, those are the exciting buzzwords. I'm going to bring this up because I think this is one of the problems moving forward as the farms are bigger, is capital. What I find right now is that a bank would rather have 10 $1 million borrowers than one $10 million borrower. Mm-hmm. Moving forward, we're going to have to finance these bigger operations differently. There, right now, right here today, there isn't a whole lot of appetite for agriculture in the banking, in the lending.
If you can't already tell, Carmen is not afraid of doing the work it takes to get better. It's so impressive how she's always growing, learning, and helping others to improve as well.
I tend to read, you know, how to be better books.
Yeah. Like business books mostly?
Mostly business books or fictional history, but mostly business books. The one I'm reading right now is Monday Morning Leadership. And, you know, it's basic. It's just very basic. And I think that, like, what I'm getting out of this book right now is you have to fix things right away. You have to communicate the good and the bad right away. I don't know. That's not prophetic. That's just what I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
You know, we're about to do our reviews. That's on this week and next week. So that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about, you know, recognition and, rewards and taking care of the issues right away. And
what I really liked was like, you have to have pain to make a change.
Which
I think is definitely true.
Yeah.
And actually
daily work done daily. I mean, that's how you keep up. Daily work done daily. You do it every day.
Exactly. That's a good one.
I guess I see my job right now as going out there, and I listen to a lot of TED Talks, something for our Monday morning meetings, and, you know, just inspire and give people different things to think about. And I mean, my people, my son and my husband, they don't read. They don't take the time to read. And so I'm always putting these book reports in front of them.
Do you get good feedback?
Yeah, I think they read them. I it's kind of funny. I hear them say, when they're talking to other people, I hear them say certain things that have been in the book.
Yeah, you kind of know the influences there, even if they don't
say
it.
Yeah, I guess I get the feeling that they did read it.
So you mentioned there's a couple kind of big milestones there, and the last one is Family Farms. What's the next milestone that's coming up?
Yeah, and that would be my retirement. So I'm 62, and I work 4 days a week. And I would like to work 3 days a week, but I would tell you that my family kind of wants me here, and they, you know, they're always figuring out something else for me to do. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I will have enough to keep me going if I stop totally. And I don't want to give up taking care of my own businesses. I take care of four of our businesses that are mine, and I could still come in and do that. But how to do that? That's gonna, and then Stanley, he stepped back a little more, and I could tell even this year that it's not as, I don't want to say it's not as important, but the energy level wasn't as high. You know, yeah, we're gonna get it done. But then I heard him say, but now that it's in the ground, you know, I'm gone. You guys can take care of it. You know what to do. So, you know, he won't step away, but he'll probably be more on call, where I think I will step totally away.
Do you have anything you're looking forward to filling up that time with?
Yeah, I would like to, because I've been in a man's world all the time, I would like to lunch with my friends. I would like to take a Bible study. I want to learn to play the guitar. I wouldn't mind writing down some of our history. I want to be able to go longer periods of time to the grandkids.
You have answered everything and more, and you're a fantastic storyteller. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Well, it's nice to meet you, and I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Ag Tech So What. You can stay up to date with the latest episodes and news at agtechsowhat.com. And as always, if you have any feedback or other guests to recommend, we'd love to hear from you. Just hop on the website and leave us a comment or send us a message. Finally, if you like what you're hearing, and we hope you do, please share the podcast with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next time.